For many years, when I was a camper in camp, I used to hear the same story over and over again. And literally every Tisha B'Av, usually I spend it with teenagers somewhere in the world, sometimes in Poland, sometimes in Israel, sometimes here in the United States. I've often started with that story, just to get a feel for an understanding of Tisha B'Av and where we're standing and what we're trying to accomplish in the day. And the story is really a mashal, it's a parable, it's something that never happened, but I think it puts the day in perspective for all of us. Many years ago in a shtetl, there was a farmer who lived out by himself, did not have any Jews around, but every once in a while a Jew would come wandering by, and he would put him up in his farmhouse, and he would take care of him. And one day, a great rabbi walked into his front door, was passing through, and asked if he could stay there, if he could have some food. And the farmer said, yeah, he was incredibly excited to have another Jew. They talked, they schmoozed, he gave him dinner, and they both went to sleep. In the morning when they awoke, both of them went out to daven. They put on their tallis and their tefillin. And the great rabbi picked up his sitter. He davened his shachris prayers and then put away his tallis and tefillin. But he noticed that the farmer kept davening and davening and davening. So he went over to see exactly what the farmer was davening. And when he went over there, he saw the most remarkable thing. He saw that he was starting with shachris, but then he went on to mincha and to marv, and he went on to Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, Chanukah, Tisha B'Av. He took the sitter and he read it from cover to cover. And after a few hours of this, when the rabbi sat by patiently watching, the farmer started to put away his tallis and tefillin, and the man said, you know, had no one ever really instructed you that there are different times to say different prayers and different times of the day? He said, no, all he had with is that one sitter, and he used to read it every single day from cover to cover. So the rabbi said, look, I'm going to put bookmarks in for you, and you're going to be able to then know what to say which part of the year and which part of the day. The farmer was really excited. This would cut out many hours from his day. And they sat and they talked. They spent time together. Another night went by, and early the next morning, the rabbi bade his host farewell, davened, and headed out. The farmer started to daven after he said farewell to the rabbi, and sure enough, he picked up his sitter, and he was so excited that he dropped it. All the bookmarks that the rabbi had put in had fallen to the ground. And he was beside himself. He was so upset. What was he going to do? So he went running after this rabbi, chased him, saw him at a far distance, and saw this rabbi, being a great rabbi, came to a running stream river that there was no way to get across. You'd have to go very far up and around to get across. And the rabbi put down a handkerchief, stepped on it, said something holy, and floated across the river. Kept walking on the other side. The farmer says, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to catch up to him. What can I do? You know, I'm going to do the same thing. Puts down the handkerchief, steps on it, floats across, puts it in his pocket, chasing it. Starts screaming, rabbi, rabbi, wait up, wait up. Catches up to the rabbi. He says, oh, the bookmarks, the sitter. The rabbi says, wait a minute, how did you catch up to me without going all the way around? He says, well, I did the exact same thing that you did. The rabbi looks at him with a smile and says, I'm not going to put the bookmarks back. The farmer says, why? You were going to save me so much time. There's so many different times of the year. He says, no, what you were doing was exactly the right way. A Jew, every single day, is supposed to feel Shabbos and Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, the judgment. It's supposed to feel the happiness of Sukkot, the Torah of Shavuos, and the sadness of Tisha B'Av. A person is supposed to feel those emotions every day. But we can't, because we're human beings. You can't be expected to go from the high to the low, to the high to the low, back and forth. You can't live. No one can live that way. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in His infinite wisdom, the Almighty said, I'm going to set different cycles to the year. And during those parts of the year, you are going to live those experiences like there's none other. And when it comes to the month of Elul, we start to feel bad. We start to say slichas. We start to do tshuva. We start to blow the shofar. And then we go to Rosh Hashanah. It's a little more intense. We blow the shofar 200 times. We sit for 10 days. And finally, we get to Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur, we're ready to go before judgment. But Tisha B'Av's no different. We have spent weeks now, 3 weeks preparing. We've spent 9 days without any meat, not doing laundry, not showering with hot water, all kinds of different things till we get the week of Tisha B'Av, till finally we're sitting at Tisha B'Av. And this is the day that we turn to the Almighty and we try to understand the years and years of suffering that we've had. And we've suffered a lot. And we try to understand why. Why did it happen to us? How can we correct it? What things can we correct to finally get rid of Tisha B'Av, so that these things don't happen anymore? So that we can finally live in harmony with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, with Hashem. I'd like to talk for a moment now about a Gemara, which everyone is familiar with, and that's the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa. And then we're going to follow with a different Gemara, which has a little bit of a different ending. The Gemara talks about the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa. Someone has a wonderfully great party, sends out the invitations, and as you'll recall from the story, there's a mix-up. Kamsa doesn't get his invitation, and instead his invitation goes to Bar Kamsa. And Bar Kamsa comes to the party, and the host is aghast. What's he doing here? I didn't invite him. He's not part of my chevra. So he turns to him and says, get out. He says, I got the invitation. I'm sorry. I apologize. Let me just pay for my meal. He says, get out. He says, I'll pay for half the suda. Please just don't embarrass me. I don't want to leave her in embarrassment. He says, I don't care. I don't like you and I don't want you here. You're my enemy. Get out. He finally offers, Bar Kamsa offers to pay for the entire meal, the entire suda. There would be no cost to the host. Host says, get out. I don't want you here. Bar Kamsa leaves. And he's distraught. And he's upset. But what upsets him the most? Is it that he was thrown out? That he was embarrassed by this host? I don't think he expected very much from this host. The Gemara says explicitly what embarrassed him. Amar, ho'il v'havu yasve rabbanan. Because the rabbanan sat. Lo machi bei shmamina kanachik lehu. Because the rabbanan didn't say anything. Because there were rabbanan, there were rabbis sitting there that watched his embarrassment. And no one stood up for him. And no one told the host, do the right thing. No one sat and took the host's hand and said, calm down. No one did that. Because of that, Bar Kamsa went out, and through treachery and trickery, and this is not meant to be any type of explanation for Bar Kamsa's actions, he went to the rulers and said, they hate you, they won't accept your sacrifice. Send a sacrifice for me and you'll see they'll reject it. And he made a blemish either in the eye or the lip. And of course, in the end, they didn't accept it. And Yerushalayim was destroyed. Yerushalayim was destroyed because of the fight of Bar Kamsa and the host. But even more so, it was destroyed because of silence. It was destroyed because people didn't speak out. Because people didn't do the right thing. In the history of the world, more damage has been done by people not speaking out than by those that do it themselves. I'd like to quote another Gemara, which is a very personal Gemara for me. It's a Gemara that's always been very close to my heart since the day I read it. But I want to give you a different Gemara with a different situation to understand how Chazal handled that situation. And Rabbi Gamliel was in charge of the Beis Medrash, and there was a question as to Maariv, whether Maariv, the evening prayers, should be obligatory, or it should be up to the person, a Rishus or a Chova. And one of the students went to Rabbi Yeshua and asked him, he said, it's a choice. And the student came to Rabbi Gamliel and said, you have to say Maariv. And the student said, but that's not what Rabbi Yeshua said. So Rabbi Gamliel brought Rabbi Yeshua in and called him on the carpet and embarrassed Rabbi Yeshua terribly. And the Rabbanan were very upset about this. And they said, Rabbi Gamliel cannot be our leader. We need to change leaders. And they said, we can't make it Rabbi Yeshua because that's too much of an affront to Rabbi Gamliel. And they took Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and they made him the leader, who was a great scholar. He was very young, but he's a great scholar. And he opened the Beis Medrash and did great things. And the most important line, as far as I'm concerned, and this was actually my yearbook quote, so this is something that means a lot to me. The most amazing quote, and I think the whole Gemara, comes up at the end of that story. It says, V'af Rabban Gamliel, lo mona atzmo b'beis ha-medrash afilo sha'achas. It says that Rabbi Gamliel never left the Beis Medrash for 1 second. Through all the embarrassment, Rabbi Gamliel was doing the right thing. He was setting the halacha. He wanted the students to understand that there had to be a unified halacha. It wasn't personal, Rabbi Yeshua. And he was taken, he was cast aside for someone else. But because Rabbi Gamliel was who he was, he understood this was not personal. He never left the Beis Medrash. He sat in the same Beis Medrash that he was up on the Bima, that he was in charge of. And he learned from Elazar, because that was the right thing to do. That was the right reaction. Can a person imagine today in a shul where they change the presidency or the rabbi, and there are all kinds of politics involved? Can a person imagine staying in that shul? Or would there be a split, and there be a break-off, and then a break-off of a break-off? What Rabbi Gamliel symbolizes is everything that went wrong by Bar Kamsa. Rabbi Gamliel symbolizes that we need to stay together as a people surrounded by Torah and focused on Torah. And we need to do the right thing, even if it's difficult. There's a certain humility that Rabbi Gamliel had, that if we had had it in the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, it never would have happened. Let me tell you a story. In a shul, most of my stories the rest of the year are happy, exciting, inspirational. I want to tell you a story that was anything but inspirational, because I think that there's an important point there. We had been working with a family, a wonderful family, who was not observant, not connected to Orthodox shul, not really connected to any shul. And their children had wound up in a day school where there wasn't a lot of Judaism taught, and they wound up making the switch. And one of their children was about to be bar mitzvah. So we had arranged with the local Orthodox shul that he could have the bar mitzvah there, and he knew the Haftorah, and he was going to daven musaf. And so it got time for musaf. And as the boy was saying musaf, he started doing the sing-song way that he had been taught, that he had always grown up hearing. And there were folks in the back of the shul that could not get over the fact that shul was not going to end at what they deemed to be the appropriate time. And when he would get into that sing-song, they would mockingly sing along with him. And the family was so embarrassed, because people understood. We think people don't get it. We think things are inside jokes. We think people aren't paying attention. We think people don't know what's going on behind the scenes. It's not true. People look up to people. Children look up to people. They know what's said at a Shabbos table, whether it's appropriate or not appropriate. Is a Shabbos table when we spend time bashing everyone in the entire world, or is it a time where it's productive and we talk about good things? A society can't be sarcastic and cynical. We need to be focused on Torah. When a person is focused on Torah, like Rabbi Gamliel, then you'll take a seat in the Beis Medrash. When a society is all about status, about who's at the party, who's not at the party, making sure everyone knows you were at the party, you're going to get a Kamsa Bar Kamsa. There's an amazing interaction in Tanakh. Amazing interaction. Between David and Shaul, the story back and forth. But there's one thing that's highlighted many times, which is the fact that Shaul sinned when it came to Amalek, and he lost the kingship forever. But when David sinned with Bathsheba, he kept the kingship forever. Don't worry about it, we'll get over it. Melech Mashiach is going to come for you. And the question that everyone always asks, Rav Shmuel Levitz asked it, is what was the difference between Shaul and David? And the answer given many times is that when you look at Shaul's reaction, he starts giving excuses. He's called on the carpet by Shmuel HaNavi. What's going on? You're supposed to draw Amalek. I hear stuff. I'm sorry, it's the people, it was this, it was that. He starts blaming everyone but himself. That's it, his rule's over. When David HaMelech is confronted, he has two words. Chatasi Lashem. I blew it. I can't pin it on anyone else. It's me. Where does David get that strength from? Where does that come from? So I want to review a story about Yosef and his brothers, and specifically about Yehuda, which on Tisha B'Av, you want to cry. You look back at the first story of brother destroying brother, selling brother, Jewish brethren not getting along, and what happens as a result. So you know the story, of course, that Yosef doesn't get along with his brothers. They see him as arrogant. They see him as very vain. And they go out, and they want to kill him. And sure enough, Yehuda jumps up and says, you can't kill him. He's our brother. We'll sell him. So they take Yosef out, and they sell him. They go back to Yaakov, to Jacob, their father, and say he's dead, and they give him the coat of many colors, which was filled with blood from an animal. And Yaakov's beside himself. He can't stop crying. And so the brothers turn to Yehuda and say, Yehuda, look what happened. You made us do this. He says, you were going to kill him. I said to sell him. They said, but we listened to you. So there is a split between Yehuda and his brothers. And for the next bunch of psukim, for the next parak, there's a wild story about Yehuda that most yeshivas skip. And then we get back to the story of Yosef. And I think that story is one of the most important stories of Chumash. And I want to talk about it for a moment or two, because I think it's going to be key to understanding how we could take Tisha B'Av and make it no longer such a day of tragedy, but a day of Simcha. So Yehuda goes down, and he's hanging out with other people, not his brothers. And his son Er gets married to a girl named Tamar, and he passes away quickly. And there's a mitzvah of Yibum, that when a brother passes away and the wife has no children, the next brother completes that mitzvah. So Onan, the next brother, marries her. He also passes away quickly. Comes time for the third child, and Yehuda says, let's hold off. Let's see what happens. He pushes off. And Tamar sees what's happening, wants to do the mitzvah of Yibum, and sees that it's not going to happen in this way. She decides that she's going to have to create a situation in which the mitzvah Yibum can happen. And the story takes a very interesting turn, and they don't teach it in Shivas because it's hard to understand. The Mefarshim all comment and talk about it. But apparently Tamar goes out, and she dresses as a prostitute. She stands on the side of the road, and she lures Yehuda in, and they perform the mitzvah Yibum. And afterwards, Yehuda doesn't have any money. She says, that's fine, give me your cloak. He doesn't realize who she is. Give me your cloak, give me your staff, give me your signet ring, and I'll hold this collateral, and you'll go get money, you'll come back. Yehuda goes, comes back, she disappears. He's not going to ask too many questions, he just drops it, and that's the end of that. Till a few months later, Tamar becomes pregnant. And the penalty for becoming pregnant, right, while having to follow Yibum, is she should be killed. They go to Yehuda, he says, yeah, that's the din. She has to be killed. Now, this is where literally it turns into almost a Hollywood movie. There is a huge bonfire. They're ready to burn Tamar. Tamar, the tzaddikus, says the following. She lifts up the cloak, the staff, and the signet ring. Says, whoever owns this cloak, this staff, and this signet ring is the father of my child. And at that point, Yehuda has a decision to make. Yehuda has to make the decision whether not to say anything, not to speak up, the way the Chachamim and Kamsa Bar Kamsa didn't speak up, or to do the right thing, or to be like Rabbi Gamliel and sit in the base medrash, even when you're embarrassed. And Yehuda says two words. which should be ingrained on every Jew's memory forever. He says, Sakam imeni. She, the person who was pregnant, the person you were going to kill, the person everyone thought terrible things about, she's more righteous than I am. And she goes on, she gives birth, and eventually, as the line goes down into David and eventually into Mashiach, one day, hopefully, maybe even today. But that's where David learned this from. Chatasi l'Hashem. That's where we have to learn it from. Being a Jew means admitting when you're wrong. And Yehuda, when he goes back to Yosef, the story continues up into Yosef. Yosef challenges them. First he keeps Shimon there, then he wants to keep Binyamin there, and he says, that's it. Yehuda steps forward and puts his life on the line for Binyamin. And says, give him back or else I'll destroy you. At that point, Yosef can't contain himself. That's when he explodes and tells his brother who he is, because he understands that Yehuda is not the same person that he was when Yosef was sold. Yehuda has changed. Yehuda is a person that takes achrayus responsibility. Yehuda is a good person. Yehuda is a person that stands up when people are wrong. That's the lesson. The lesson is standing up when people are wrong. The lesson is standing up to our friends, our acquaintances, people we see all the time, saying to someone, this is not right. It's not the Torah way. We have to take responsibility for ourselves. We're in this mess. We're in this galus. We're in this exile. We're in this churban. Because we didn't take responsibility. Because we weren't honest with ourselves. Because we lack the humility of Rabbi Gamliel to be honest with ourselves. Our job on Tisha B'Av. Our job on Tisha B'Av is to be honest, to be humble, to look at ourselves, look around us. How can we make this world a better place? A person's born, a person dies. And today we're talking a lot about death because today is Tisha B'Av. The question is, what can you do from point A to point B? What can we build and accomplish? And more than that, as Jews, there's a baton being handed generation to generation that started all the way back with Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. It was a baton of the Torah. And we build off every generation. We look to the previous generations. And we have to learn this lesson. The reason we're still in Golos is not only because of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. It's because we haven't learned the lesson. We haven't changed enough. If we change enough, this will all be over. This will all be over. That's the lesson of the day. So our goal, wish everyone much success, is to sit today to mourn for what we've lost, but to understand exactly how we can get it back.